There's a darkness creeping over this land, and that darkness is infiltrating churches and, in many cases, destroying churches. Did you know that according to some experts, there could have been as many as 15,000 churches in the U.S. that closed last year? And where churches close, darkness grows. One of the most important duties as a pastor is threat assessment, to be on guard for threats to the health and unity of the church. There are many reasons churches are closing. I just want to talk about one of them today, and I'll do it in a roundabout way. You read the epistles of Paul, and it's obvious there was a problem in the early church. The issue was dividing believers one against another. The early church was a mixture of Jews and Gentiles. Jews were raised under the Old Covenant, the laws God gave through Moses. These included moral laws like do not give false testimony and do not murder. But there were also ceremonial laws, which included restrictions of what food was clean or unclean. But Jesus brought a big change to the community of faith when he declared all foods clean. However, many Jewish believers held fast to those old rules and were judging others by what they ate. They thought they were being true to their beliefs, but in reality, they were sowing division. But that wasn't the only problem. Much of the meat sold in the markets had been sacrificed to idols, so many Christians believed you should eat only vegetables to avoid what was tainted by idolatry. So they were condemning the meat eaters among them. And the meat eaters were feeling marginalized by the vegetable party. And the pork eaters were feeling marginalized by the non-pork party. And those who understood that they had the freedom to eat any food were doing so in front of those who held a different conviction. And so here, when they should have been celebrating what they had in common, they were focusing on what divided them. And it was poison in the church. The Apostle Paul had to address the matter. Romans 14:13, Paul said, "Let us stop passing judgment on one another. Instead, make up your mind not to put any stumbling block or obstacle in the way of a brother or sister." Eating meat in front of a vegetarian was a stumbling block. So Paul said, "Stop it." And he said, verse 19, "Let us therefore make every effort to do what leads to peace and mutual edification." Then verse 20, "Do not destroy the work of God for the sake of food." They thought they were being true to their convictions, and each was sure they were in the right. But Paul knew they were destroying the unity of the church that Jesus died for. So Paul concludes, verse 22, "So whatever you believe about these things, keep between yourself and God." But I'm not really talking about food, am I? The nonpartisan research company, Study Finds Analysis, just reported a week ago in their article entitled, "Politics is Destroying American Friendships, and it's Getting Worse." Their polling shows that more than a third of Americans have lost at least one relationship over politics. Most of these lost more than one. And lost means lost. They don't associate with each other at all anymore. And for how this is affecting churches, I want to read some quotes from articles written recently by Christian leaders. I have never really taken the time to express why I'm determined to keep this property a politics-free zone, and this is my opportunity to do that. The first article I want to read from is by Ben Kachioris, a pastor of a church in Maryland. He says, "Over the last 2 years, I've listened to pastors and witnessed churches across the country share sad stories. They tell of congregations splitting, longtime members leaving, and pastors getting fired. I've seen tight-knit small groups blow apart, families feud, and longtime friendships abruptly end. We polarize over every issue, demonize those with different viewpoints, and categorize everyone with unkind labels we learn from our favorite news channel. Unquote. Dave Lowe, one of the regional directors of Campus Crusade for Christ, writes, "There's a lot of political division in our country these days, and this political division has seeped into the church. These last 8 to 10 years in the United States have been a breeding ground for the enemy to sow divisiveness and discord among Jesus' followers. For example, I've seen people on various social media platforms who've made the statement, 'I don't see how you can be a Christian and vote for,' and you fill in the blank." Unquote. Now, I personally witnessed this. There's a leader in another church in the area. I won't say which one. This leader posted on Facebook during the last election, "You can't be a Christian and vote for Kamala Harris." You think any Democrat, or independent for that matter, will ever trust his leadership or want to join his church? As Lutheran pastor Matthew Harrison wrote, "It is ever perilous for a church leader to speak publicly into highly contentious cultural and political issues." Unquote. What's that saying? Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. But how does this darkness seep into the church to divide brother against brother, sister against sister? Well, the conflict goes like this. Someone from one side makes a negative comment about the other party or other party's leader, and that provokes someone on the other side to say, "Oh yeah, well what about your guy or gal?" And because everyone is walking around with their guns half-cocked these days, instantly, you have conflict and mistrust between brothers in the same church. If that happens a time or two, the person from the other party is going to feel they don't belong in that church anymore. We almost lost one of our own because this person felt marginalized by what they perceived as partisanship of others in the church. Well, it turned out it was mostly a misunderstanding, and the matter was soon resolved. But it showed me how easily we can lose someone over political differences, and we can't afford to lose any of you. The writer also says, quote, "Why should church leaders refrain from taking a public stance for a candidate or aligning with a party or political position? Because we have been given a much higher calling, and we must not do anything that prevents us from executing our God-given mission." Still quoting, "I'm a Christian and a pastor. If I make it clear I'm a Trump guy or a Biden guy," obviously this was written a couple years ago, "I've immediately forfeited my ability to represent Christ to anyone who disagrees with me politically. That puts Jesus in the background and everyone who disagrees with me on the opposing side." And he says, "If some Christians were as excited about the mission of Christ as they are about their politics, we would have a revival." When someone comes through the doors of your church, they do not need to know where you stand on various issues. They need Jesus. He's the only source of healing and hope for the people of this country. Unquote. Now from a Lutheran pastor, he wrote, "In our day, political fervor runs hot. Cultural battles flare and fade, but the gospel remains eternal. To confuse the political issues of the day with the core message of the church is to risk losing the one thing that gives life. Our sacred task is calling all to repentance and proclaiming the one eternal remedy for sin, the blessed life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. Jesus said, 'My kingdom is not of this world.' We participate in civic life, serve our neighbors as soldiers, teachers, officials, and citizens. But the church itself, gathered around the word and sacrament, remains something other. Its weapons are not the sword or the ballot box, but the Word of God. When the church becomes the mouthpiece of ideology, it ceases to be the church. Here, sinners are gathered, the broken are bound up, the hungry are fed, the grieving are comforted. The preaching of the gospel creates engaged citizens who vote, petition, speak out for justice, protest, feed, love, and serve. But it is not the church as an institution that is called to reform society. Rather, through faithful biblical teaching, the church transforms individual lives, and through them, communities and even the world. One pastor says it this way: Jesus didn't send his disciples into the world to Christianize empires or legislate virtue. He sent them to announce forgiveness, to proclaim good news, to baptize sinners, to feed the hungry, to comfort the grieving, to bear one another's burdens. The church exists to make Christ known. That's a far more beautiful, far more liberated calling. When the church keeps its clear witness, the world hears what it most desperately needs, not another partisan diatribe, but the saving message of the cross. The church must not echo the voice of political ideology, but the voice of Christ. Unquote. Those are thoughts of respected Christian leaders, and we can agree or disagree with them. But Jesus is our ultimate example. Our aim as his disciples is always to emulate him. So my final thoughts will be from Jesus himself. There was plenty of politics in Jesus' day. In fact, Jesus was at the center of a political firestorm. The Jewish people were hoping very, very much that Jesus would lead them in a political revolution to oppose Caesar's rule over them. So much so that we read in the Gospel of John 6:15, when he performed the miracle of feeding the 5,000, they intended to take him and make him king by force. But Jesus would have none of it. Instead, he slipped away into the night. On another occasion, in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 22, we read that the Pharisees baited Jesus to talk politics when they asked him, "Is it right to pay taxes to Caesar?" Because many Jews called for resisting Rome by not paying the tax. So it was a very political question, but Jesus gave a very non-political answer. "Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, and to God what is God's." They were baiting him to choose sides: the ruling Roman party or the Jewish Liberation Party. If he chose sides either way, they could use it against him. But he didn't choose sides, because he had in mind to save both Jews and Romans. Instead of choosing between parties, he offered them a kingdom that transcended parties. Likewise, in Luke 23, verse 3, Pilate asked Jesus a very political question when he asked, "Are you the king of the Jews?" But Jesus responds with a completely unpolitical answer: "My kingdom is not of this world." Jesus, the apostles after him, and the early church for the first 300 years generally stayed out of politics, because they knew their high calling was to bring the good news of Jesus Christ to the world, regardless of the politics of the day. And by the way, about 30 years later, the Jews finally did get the political revolution they so much longed for. But it ended very, very badly for them, with perhaps a million dead Jewish men, women, and children, mostly from starvation and disease, and another 100,000 sold into slavery. So when it comes to politics, we should be careful what we wish for. And just as Paul became all things to all people so that he might save some, whether Jew or Gentile, whether slave or free, whether Democrat or Republican, I think we do well to emulate him. I am thine, O Lord, I have heard thy voice, and it told thy love to me. But I long to rise in the arms of faith and be closer drawn to thee. Draw me nearer, nearer, blessed Lord, to the cross where thou hast died. Draw me nearer, 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 blessed Lord, to thy precious bleeding side. Consecrate me now to thy service, Lord, by the power of grace divine. Let my soul look up with a steadfast hope, and my will be lost in thine. Draw me nearer, nearer, blessed Lord, to the cross where thou hast died. Draw me nearer, 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 blessed Lord, to thy precious bleeding side. Oh, the pure delight of a single hour that before thy throne I spend. When I kneel in prayer and with thee, my God, I commune as friend with friend. Draw me nearer, nearer, blessed Lord, to the cross where thou hast died. Draw me nearer, 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 blessed Lord, to thy precious bleeding side. There are depths of love that I cannot know till I cross the narrow sea. There are heights of joy that I may not reach till I rest in peace with thee. Draw me nearer, nearer, blessed Lord, to the cross where thou hast died. Draw me nearer, 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 blessed Lord, to thy precious bleeding side.